You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
I'll tell you what, drastic times call for drastic gestures, and NASCAR just delivered. Carlin, 800-919-3776. Rob Manfred says 100% there will be baseball this year. Ooh, I'm all a Twitter. We'll get to that later on. We'll get to the Boston Red Sox, as you just might have heard Michael Kay talking about a few minutes ago, putting out a fairly significant statement. Anything you want to discuss tonight, as always, at 800-919-3776. You can always chime in, friends, over on Twitter. That's what it's there for. That's for you to check in on. So by all means, do so at Chris Carlin, C-H-R-I-S-C-A-R-L-I-N. I honestly can't believe I'm starting the show with NASCAR. I've never had an ounce of interest in NASCAR, to be honest. Not one bit. Unfortunately, the extent of my NASCAR coverage or time wherever I really got into it and thought it was a significant story was at the death of Dale Earnhardt Sr. But there haven't been many times since that I've been all that interested. He was obviously an icon. I've been to a couple of tracks. When I used to work on the Imus show, I went a couple times. Never did anything for me, to be honest. But today is a significant day. I have to tell you, when I heard the news that the Confederate flag is no longer going to be allowed at NASCAR events, according to their statement that they put out earlier today, this is going to sound strange, but at first, I wondered if it was the right move. And the reason is, quite simply, freedom of speech. And so when you think about that, it can't be limited to just what you care about in freedom of speech, what you think is right. If there's truly freedom to speak your mind, it has to involve anybody able to speak. I mean, numerous times the Supreme Court has deemed hate speech to be covered under freedom of speech. I don't agree with it at all, but at first I kind of wondered, is this the right way to go if you're NASCAR? And then I started to think about it, and it is one of those times where this is such a drastic situation. We are in a time that, you know, a lot of people I've seen have been reacting on social media that, oh my God, this is such an overreaction on NASCAR's part for the basis of just all of the political correctness and everything going on right now. And please, please. What is so complicated about our freedoms is to hear that which you hate. You don't want to hear that you have the ability to speak your mind, even though the words that somebody else may say may be hateful. You know, you both have the same right. So is it right to ban it? It is. And here's why. NASCAR has this reputation of having fans that are predominantly white. And there's a reason for that. They are. 80% of NASCAR fans are white. Only 20% are a member of a minority group. 9% are Hispanic. 8% of NASCAR fans are black. 8% of NASCAR fans are black. So think about that for a moment. You have the Confederate flag as a major symbol in the South. And people in the South would love to tell you all about its history, all about how important it is, it's important to their heritage. The majority of the country, and by the majority of the country, I'd say 90%, look at the Confederate flag and think of one thing, and that's slavery. And that's what the South fought for. And to them, the Confederate flag is hate speech. So when you have a sport that is 80% white and 40% of your entire fan base in the country is from the South, another 25% from the Midwest, rural areas and the South. You are telling them that it is not okay to display a flag that means nothing but hate to so many people around the country. Think about that. Think about the statement they just made. This is the single most important statement that has been made in sports so far. It is. Because NASCAR has fans that 8 to 1 is the ratio of white to black. And they just said that the Confederate flag is not okay. And then you're going to come at me with freedom of speech. All right, let's talk about that for a second, right? When we talked about Colin Kaepernick, everybody discussed freedom of speech and how that's supposed to be what you're supposed to be able to do. And it's all 100% true. And the Confederate flag, you should be able to fly because that's freedom of speech. Frankly, 100% true. I don't agree with what your speech is, but accurate. I may not agree with Colin Kaepernick wanting to take a knee for the national anthem, but accurate. Free speech. The problem is, you know, the NFL could have told him at the time, you can't do this. You cannot be under our employ and do this. It's against the rules of what comes with working for us. In essence, they did end up telling him that by nobody signing him. Right? Because when he did it, it's not like he got fired right away. He opted out of his contract and then did not get another job. So that was, in essence, the league telling him, you can't do that and work here. Look at your ticket sometime for any major sporting event. There are rules, right? There are rules. And when you purchase that ticket, you are agreeing to those rules. So if NASCAR is saying that you can't come to our race and carry or display a Confederate flag, they are saying in our place to enjoy our sport in person, we will not tolerate that. That is a massive gesture from, let's just call it out, a sport that has the reputation of having fans that are not all that enlightened when it comes to this stuff. That's what the reputation is. Whether or not it's true, I don't know what the NASCAR fan well enough to sit there and tell you that. I know a lot of NASCAR fans who are highly enlightened, but the reputation of the sport is that it is somewhat a group that's not all that enlightened or educated. So now you're in a position where if you're a fan of NASCAR and you want to go, but you want to wear your Confederate flag shirt or you want to display your Confederate flag, these are now the rules that you have to abide by. To be a fan of our sport in person, this is what you have to do. Is that taking away your freedom of speech? To a degree, it is, but only in that venue, because that's the venue that is run by that particular sport. It's like telling me that I have a right to privacy, but if I'm going to work, I have to take a drug test if I'm going to go work for a particular company. And I'm going to argue, wait, no, that's, I have a right to privacy. No, that, okay, yeah, you do. But our rules are that in order for you to work here, you have to take a drug test. You don't have to work for me. You can go do it somewhere else. But our rules are this. Colin Kaepernick was subtly put out of a job because of what he did. They didn't directly tell him, you cannot do this, or you will not work in our league. They had right to do it. Could have been part of the contract, but they didn't. I support all free speech there. Let's be clear about that. You want to fly a Confederate flag? Go nuts. I don't care. You want to kneel during the national anthem? Go nuts. I don't care. I think it's amazing that we can have a country where you're allowed to do both. But in private situations, people make up their own rules. And I applaud NASCAR for doing this, because you might say NASCAR is stripping people of their freedom of speech. No, NASCAR is saying that they will not tolerate hate speech in their sport in person. They won't. And to the majority of America, a Confederate flag is just that. It's hate speech. So, with that in mind, I can't believe that I'm beginning the show by talking about this. But bravo, NASCAR. Bravo. I don't know that I'm going to be watching the sport anytime soon. That has more to do with the fact that it's an incredibly dangerous sport where somebody could die at any moment. But for me, I actually applaud the stance that they just took. Well done. Care to discuss? 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. It's Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. We will hit the open lines next when we return, so get on board. Later in the show, we'll discuss baseball because, you know, it's there. And we will also, we'll talk about other things. Why nobody wants to call me back these days, I don't know what that's about. All of a sudden, I'm persona non grata. It's hurtful. And it's not right. I feel like I'm bleeding from the nose. I'm just getting ignored so much. Tagged. Just absolutely tagged.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Let us hit the phones. Brian in Norwalk, Connecticut is up first tonight. Brian, what's going on?
Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm a big NASCAR fan. I've been a NASCAR fan since 87, and I did a lot of camping outside the track. And I saw early on, like in the early 90s, I did see a lot of Confederate flags. Now, this was Dover, Delaware. Uh-huh. And throughout the years, they slowly went away. And then I would go to races in New Hampshire. I would see almost no Confederate flags. And then I went to a race in Talladega. That's a different area. And the sport is like regional. I don't know if you understand. The Northeast has their modified race cars. The Midwest has their dirt sprint or World of Outlaws. And then the South has NASCAR. But NASCAR is kind of the biggest of all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's all by region. Like, you don't see the Confederate flags until you get into, like, SEC football country.
Right, right. I think the bigger issue here, though, is that 40% of their entire fan base is from the South. So that's why this is such a significant thing. That's according to numbers that they put out.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. Because a lot of the drivers are from California, Indiana.
Well, here's what their report, NASCAR's fan base demographics. This is from them, okay? 40% are from the South, 25% from the Midwest, 20% from the West, 15% from the Northeast.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, there's not a lot of auto racing fans in the Northeast, and some of them are like kind of snooty to NASCAR and they just want to watch their thing. One point I want to make, Carlin, uh-huh. is that five years ago, NASCAR did ban all Confederate flags from their tracks. Now, the tracks are privately owned, so they can fly whatever flags they want. So NASCAR said, no, you cannot fly a Confederate flag while we race there. And then the TV networks also said, we're not showing any Confederate flags. So for two or three races after that, there is people like trying to get into, you know, into the camera with their Confederate flag hat. And they put an end to that right away. That was 5 years ago. So it's not anything new. Now they're just telling the fans that go camping, they cannot fly the Confederate flag.
Well, listen, I think that more than anything, this is them making a massive statement to a large portion of their fans, and thanks for the call, that this is no longer going to be acceptable. And I give them so much credit for that, Brian, because I think that when you consider that they have been in this situation as long as they have, that they have, in essence, said that their fans, knowing what their demographics are, I don't want to say they've let it go, but at the same time, they today made a massive statement that was incredibly important on the just developing situation when it comes to potential growth. Here it is. This is the opportunity. And you may not love the fact that it's all being thrown at you at once. What I would say to that would be tough, because you've had it pretty good for, oh, I don't know, 400 years. Danny in Long Island. Hey, Danny, what's going on?
Good afternoon, Christopher. Put the phone down. School is now open. Having majored in American history and been reading about the Civil War, I have an inscription in my elementary school yearbook where somebody wrote something about me reading the Civil War Chronicles. So I'm going to throw that a little knowledge. Mm-hmm. The Civil War was fought in this country 160 years ago. It still remains the defining moment of this country. We fought a war to end slavery. 500,000 American people died. That flag, to me, is the symbol of treason. I don't know where it ever... I remember watching Atlanta Falcon games as a kid. Forget NASCAR. There'd be people in the crowd at Atlanta Stadium waving that flag. Do I think that they knew what that meant? Most likely not. We failed to
educate. I have to be honest. At the time when the... But even this is a stupid analogy, but I'll make it anyway because I'm not that bright. I loved watching the Dukes of Hazzard. I had no idea what it meant on the General Lee.
You have to understand that the Civil War was fought with a viciousness that had not been seen on a global scale. Other nations sent people here to watch Americans kill themselves at a biblical rate. For the first time in Western civilization history, we made war against civilians. We burned states. The Union, after playing nice for 2 years, burned the South to the ground. They starved the civilian population in Vicksburg to death. They did not celebrate the 4th of July down south in Vicksburg for 100 years. It did not because they took away their slaves. Most of the people didn't have slaves, but because the manner in which the North fought the war. That's why they were pissed. So the Confederate flag was like, this is our culture. We're still here. But that's too late. It was a treasonous flag. It was raised in battle against our forefathers. It has no part in this country. It shouldn't be anywhere but in a museum. However, I do not have a problem. And what happened was, after the war, this is how vicious it was. The Union sent people all over the country to find every Union soldier who died in battle. They left the Southern bodies to rot in the field. This was vicious. Wasn't like, I'm good. So now, 100 years later, a lot of these statues cropped up around the turn of the century in the South. Little monuments in town squares where, hey guys, 150 of our boys died in the Civil War. Would it be okay if we just put a monument saying, honoring the men of the 103rd Alabama, make it up? So it's just a monument to remember the lost. It's not glorified. So those monuments I have no problem with. A statue of Robert E. Lee, take it down. He was in charge of the Union Army. He resigned. He's no better than Benedict Arnold. There should be no statues of Robert Lee anywhere in this country. Enough. Stupidity.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything that you're saying. And it's, you know, Danny, when people see, it's so funny. Remember last week, Bart was talking about the American flag, and he said that when a lot of people look at that, sometimes when black people look at it, they don't see the same thing that we do. But the majority of people, I would say outside of the South, 90% look at that and think of slavery.
I have a picture in my basement of the Irish Brigade hoisting their unit colors at the battles of Gettysburg at the key moments of our country's history. It's the Irish Brigade's flag and the flag of the United States of America. And the guy's doing, and if it didn't work there, it was the whole thing was going to, the whole experiment was going to fail. I would not personally kneel because that moment that I see people of my heritage, the Irish Brigade, I'm half Irish, half Italian, who stood up and said, no, I am not going to allow slavery in the Northern Hemisphere. This is Western. This is nonsense. So those people who had the Irish last names of my mother and father, they died for that. So I will not kneel because that means that, but I respect anyone else's right to kneel. I just want to make sure that some people who don't want to kneel are not in trouble because that's their heartfelt opinion.
Yeah, the thing I would say, though, too, and I'm not advocating for you to kneel. Just remember that people of all races died for that flag.
That's right. And everybody has a right to do, as long as everyone's opinion is respected.
Absolutely.
If Alejandro Villanueva, who parachuted to combat in Afghanistan, Bronze Star winner, wants to bust out of the Steeler locker room and stand there, well, then everybody should applaud his decision because he fought to be able to make that decision. And if the guy next to him wants to kneel, that's fine, too.
Danny, great call.
Bust up the locker rooms. You know it's going to bust up the locker rooms, Chris.
I know. But you know what? I appreciate the phone call, man. That was great knowledge you gave to us there. Good stuff. Great job by Danny, who's always a very good caller. Here was the actual statement from NASCAR earlier today. The presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events runs contrary to our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans, our competitors, and our industry. Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and sport special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from all NASCAR events and properties. Wow. I mean, listen, that to me is the single most important statement that we have seen so far throughout all of this. Just given what the demographics of that sport are. Of the sports fans are. And you can thank Bubba Wallace. If you haven't followed the Bubba Wallace story, he is the only black driver on the NASCAR circuit. And he called for this the other day and said the Confederate flag should absolutely be nowhere near this. And people can all, you know, complain about the idea that maybe he just got this done because now everybody's got to be politically correct with what's going on. No, it's not politically correct. It's what's right and what's wrong. That's it. Period. End of story. Carlin, with you. Hey, guess what? Rob Manfred spoke today, and he did because the MLB draft is going on as we speak, only five rounds this year, another place where the owners are saving a boatload of money because after the five rounds, there is a maximum in terms of the free agent signings that they have for players that are not drafted, similar to what happens after the NFL draft. They go out and sign the guys who weren't drafted. There is a cap of $20,000 for guys after the fifth round for free agents that are signed with teams in terms of their signing bonus. That cap, prior to that, the average signing bonus for somebody that was drafted in the sixth round or later, in the sixth round, was well over $100,000. So there's a lot of money being saved all over the place by owners. What a shocker! Well, Carl Ravich interviewed the commissioner just a little while ago on ESPN. And instead of just hearing the bits and pieces, I want to listen to the entire thing because I didn't get to hear the whole thing either. I only heard a couple of bits and pieces. It's about 5 minutes long. So let's collectively take a listen. Here is Carl Ravich with the commissioner, Rob Manfred.
All 29 teams will be picking tonight with the exception of the Houston Astros. This is about the present because it's a draft, but the future is what a lot of folks are concerned about, and that's why we have the Commissioner Rob Manfred joining us here now. We were supposed to be in Omaha. This was the College World Series. This was going to be a big celebration, and yet it is for the kids and it's not for the sport. Can you tell us, given the counter proposals, what's next for you and the Major League Baseball Players Association?
Yes, Carl, we're going to be making a responsive proposal to the proposal that we received late last night. It will be another significant move in the players' direction in terms of the salary issue that has kept us apart. And we're hopeful that it will produce reciprocal movement from the Players Association, that we'll see a number other than 100% on salary and some recognition that 89 games, given where we are in the calendar and the course of the pandemic, is not realistic.
So 89-game season, full prorated salary for the players. It feels like the players are sticking to 100%, and you have said, I can mandate a 48-50-game schedule. Do you not believe that the two sides are, that's where we're at, and we have to move towards the middle, or we have to operate from that?
I'm a big believer in the process. I would prefer to negotiate a new agreement with the MLBPA that gets us more games and resolves the issues that have separated us amicably. But at the end of the day, we negotiated for the right in March to start the season on a number of games that we select in these particular circumstances. And if we have to, we'll exercise that right.
There was a March 26th agreement. From the agreement to where we are today, can you explain, in your opinion, how we got here?
Well, I think that, the March 26th agreement was premised on the belief, mutual belief, that we were going to be in a position where we would be playing baseball games in full stadiums. And I think that we find ourselves in a situation where we're going to be playing largely without fans, if not exclusively without fans. And that altered the economic landscape and really required another negotiation.
For baseball fans, and I hear this all the time, and I'm sure you do, there seems to be a tone deafness between your group and the players about what's going on in the present, as opposed to a collective bargaining agreement. This is different. Is there recognition, do you think, between the two sides that this is different?
You know, I can't speak for the Players Association. I can tell you unequivocally that the owners understand this is different, that they're listening to what their fans saying, and that they are listening to what the players are saying, and they're continuing to make proposals as a result of the input that they're receiving from those sources.
How will you feel if and when this time comes, we're playing 48 games, boys, and let's get ready to go? How will you feel if that's the end result of this?
I'll be disappointed that we're unable to reach an agreement that allows us to play more games. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, the most important thing, and I'm not buying into your number of 48, the most important thing is that we play Major League Baseball in 2020, and I can tell you unequivocally, we are going to play Major League Baseball this year.
Well, I'll be honest, my number would be 60 to 70 games, and you pay a full prorated salary, and we get back to the game of baseball. Why wouldn't that be acceptable?
You know, Carl, I'm not going to get into bargaining with you about issues with the Players Association. We'll make another proposal to them that's consistent with the economic realities that we're looking at, including the fact that our revenues are going to be down over 70%. And hopefully we'll find some flexibility on the other side and make an agreement.
I've heard September 27th. We want to end the regular season there, hear about expanded playoffs. When are you going to have your back up against the wall? What's the date where you have to say 48, 50, whatever that number is in your mind? When is that date?
I don't want to commit to a particular date when we have to go down that path. I will tell you this. Each and every day that goes by, we lose the capacity to play at least one game. And that's really the time pressure that's significant at this point in time.
You've been a significant player in all of these recent negotiations. What has that taught you about how you see this resolving itself?
Look, I think you need to commit to the process. We're committed to the process. I try not to be judgmental about the proposals that the other side makes. I try to respond and always try to move in the direction of the other side and let the process work. We're going to continue to do that.
And lastly, the percent of a chance we're playing Major League Baseball this year?
100%.
I got to tell you, Rob Manfred does so little for me, it's amazing. You know, I can't speak for the players. The owners understand, and they're listening, and we're making offers accordingly when it comes to the tone deaf. No. You all are tone deaf. That's a tone deaf answer. That's a tone deaf answer to a question that it's not all that hard. And if you haven't been prepared for it, I mean, what the hell are you doing? You know that people are going to ask you about the fact that two sides are negotiating right now in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of racial strife in the country, and you both look like horses' asses right now. And that does not seem to bother him in the least. Not in the least. We negotiated this March 26th agreement to be able to have this discussion if, in fact, there were not going to be fans and all that. Oh, my God. It's getting more like one of those, car wrecks that you drive by. Sometimes you just can't look away between these two. Just how poor they are at trying to get anything done. It's borderline impressive that you can actually not get this done. That you can be this obtuse about the entire situation. I'm looking at my notes. I'm taking notes as I'm writing that down, as I'm listening to Manfred. And there is nothing of substance that I took out of that other than, well, we're going to make another proposal. Hopefully they'll come off that 100% number. I got news for you. They're not. That's pretty clear. I'm not going to, I'll tell you the other thing too. Manfred has a really unlikable quality about the way he comes off in these interviews sometimes. I'm not going to buy into your number, Carl. Yeah, whatever. It's not like he was jamming it down your throat. You know, and then when he does bring up, well, how about 60 or 70 games? Oh, I'm not going to negotiate through you. Stop. You've been negotiating through the press this entire time, Rob. So is the other side. Ugh, I'm so sick of both of you. So sick of it. See, this is why, to me, like, if I'm going to look at a 50-game season after all of this, like, that's my reward? Woo! Thanks. And then I'm going to go through it again next year, and it's going to be nastier. You idiots are really killing the golden goose. And it's not even a golden goose. It's like kind of silver. Like maybe a little bit bronze by this point. And by the time we get to the end of next year, baseball's going to be like, this metaphor's not going anywhere. I was going to say like a cubic zirconia goose, but you get the point. The game is going to take a beating because of all your labor strife. Oh, a beating.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Well, now we've gone and done it. I mean, COVID, just enough.
I'm your idol, the highest title, numero uno. I'm not a Puerto Rican, but I'm speaking.
I hate to break it to you. You know, Kyrie, give me the breaking news sounder. This is just so depressing. But it must be known.
Here's Carlin with breaking news.
Coachella has been canceled. Damn! Oh, the skin bedazzling industry is now the latest to take a beating courtesy of COVID. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Coachella canceled. Well, just cancel my summer. I guess it's not going to be hot guy summer this year, huh? Not for me. Not for me. 800-919-3776. Phones, Gary, Jersey City, next. Gary, go.
Hey, Carlin, how you doing?
Well, Coachella was just canceled, Gary, so I don't know why I'm, you know, not just walking off the show.
Hey,
right now.
I'm a privileged white guy who doesn't need Coachella to drop acid. So let's move on from that.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well, hey, I just take care of my own business. I actually wanted to talk about the whole MLB union thing going on. We can talk about revenue and salaries based on revenue. The owners own the teams. The teams become more valuable every year. And that's not, that has to be part of the discussion. The Wilpons bought the Mets in the 80s for around $80 million, if my numbers are correct. And they screwed up the greatest business deal in the world when they could have sold it for $2.6 billion because, you know, daddy's little boy had to maintain control over baseball decisions. It's just, it's not fair to the workers to just talk about revenue. There are other ways that owners make money.
There are many ways that owners make money. And
yes, of course.
Of course, all the value is there. And every time they plead poverty, they talk about how the value is really in the sale, and that's where it is. It's fine. Stop talking about how much money you don't make. Everybody understands that by not having fans in the stands this year, you are obviously losing money. We get it. We understand.
No, they're not getting revenue. They're not losing money.
Well, losing money that they would, losing money that they would have been making. They're not making as much money in this particular business.
They're not making revenue. Is a baseball team going to be worth more money next year than this year if you sell it? Yes.
Well, not definitively. Not definitively, Gary. I mean, you actually might see the value of the teams go down a little bit for a year or two because of this.
Yes. I apologize for the beep, beep, beep on my phone.
No, that's
but
what do you got, call waiting from 1988?
No, it's just I've got a screwed up iPhone that if I don't press my ear against it completely, it starts dialing other numbers. it's a pain in the ass.
There is nothing worse. On my end, there is nothing worse than the than the fat face iPhone dial.
Yes. Look, all I'm trying to say is, like a man who would buy a radio station, for example, in the Midwest, he buys it because there's a limited quantity and it goes up in value every year. A Major League Baseball team, an NFL football team, and any other team that is out there in professional sports goes up in value. All we talk about when it comes to players getting money is the revenue. Well, the revenue is what we sell and make every day. The entity that the owners have goes up in value. So it's just an oversimplification to simply say that, oh, we have to base this all on revenue because the owners are going to, you know, make out like dogs like they always do because that's why they're rich. And I'm fine with that.
The bottom line here, Gary, is, and thanks for the call, the reason that the value of the franchises go up is that they are extremely profitable. That's it. Don't explain it to me otherwise. I get it. I understand completely. And you can try to show me all you want with all the creative math about how you're getting hammered and, God, we just don't make a lot of money when it comes to owning a baseball team. Just stop. Like, I would believe that if you're talking about the Miami Marlins. I would believe that. I would believe it to a degree with the New York Mets just knowing how much money that they owe on the stadium. That's a problem. I would also point out that they own 65% of a television network that has been printing money for years, for well, about 14, 15 years now. Printing money. Getting $4 a month. You know, Yankees, same thing. I mean, you haven't heard word one about the Yankees cutting any salaries or doing anything like that because they're fine. The Yankees are more than fine and will navigate their way through this. The point is, you can't try to sit there and tell us about all the money you're losing when it's true it's just revenue not coming in that you were counting on, but you're also not opening the stadiums. You're not right now. You're not paying, you know, all the employees of the ballpark. You're not absorbing all the costs, and you're not paying the players right now either. So, yes, there are costs associated with owning the team, but let's not get nuts here. Julius in Morristown is next. Julius, how are you, bud?
I'm doing good, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What do you got?
Great. Hey, real quick, I want to give a quick shout-out to Free. He's the reason I listen to ESPN Radio. But, Chris, with this whole
where are you from in Morristown, Julius?
I'm from a section called Collinsville. It's a little black suburb. I lived on Monroe Street.
In Morristown, New Jersey.
In Morristown, New Jersey, yeah. Scott gets his hair cut on Abbott Avenue at Hair Affair. I didn't mean to blow
I know
up.
Exactly where it is. I grew up right nearby.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yeah. Jersey. There you go. Stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with this whole NASCAR stuff, I, as a black guy, I never, ever in my bones could ever gravitate towards the NASCAR, towards the racing, despite how cool some of the racing is and all the excitement I could see them having, because I know what that Confederate flag stands for, and I know what it means to me, and it's not right. And to sit here and listen a lot of times to these callers who still don't understand right is right and wrong is wrong. You know, like, I could tell you, Chris, from being from Morristown, you know, it's very diverse, right? Like, yep. I can have a legitimate reason, if you will, quotations, for saying I don't like white people for the way I was treated. But I'm a person, and I walk around this earth, and I can't do it. I can't put people as a whole in a box and say you're all this or you're all that. Right is right, wrong is wrong, Chris. It's terrible.
Well, that to me is what it's amazing that it gets lost so easily. That it's not about, like, there are not two sides to this issue. There's right and there's wrong, and if you're on the wrong side, you need to get on the right side of it. And I'll tell you the other thing that frustrates me, Julius, to no end. And I am by no means, you know, trying to portray myself as this incredibly enlightened individual, okay? But I know that people are born equal. And I know, just very simply, if I looked at a situation and I listened to African Americans the last few weeks and how they describe their lives and how they describe the possibility of getting pulled over at any time for any reason, the possibility of being questioned for anything they're doing, for going out for a walk in the wrong neighborhood, it would, to me, if I could put myself in that situation for just one second, and it's not hard to do, I'd be pretty damn upset too.
Yeah, I don't think I should have to sit on the curb just for, you know, going 10 miles over the speed limit with all of my paperwork being in the right place. You know, you didn't get any dings on any, you know, warrants for me. Why am I out here on the curb? I'm a grown man. What's going on here? It's bigger than that. They know what it is. We know what it is. But I'm
Julius,
glad getting the attention.
Julius, as I've said before, the worst thing that I worry about when I get pulled over is my insurance going up.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, Chris, you're doing a great job at least showing other white brothers and sisters, hey, listen, this is what you do. You just listen, you open up your ears, and you have your heart in the right place. You'll connect, or you won't.
Julius, you're a good man. Thank you.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.